Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Tom.
My favorite part of that is that I didn't point correctly on your screen. It's okay. It's recorded on my screen. So I will have, for the actual show, the pointing is correct. Anyway, this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. It's been a while since we did it, a little bit different introduction. So there we go. As always, we're socially distanced. I'm in the Midwest. Ross is in the Northeast. And Tom's in Michigan?
I'm in Michigan at this moment. According to my wife, I live there sometimes.
I was to say, where on the hand?
Metro Detroit. I'm a Detroiter, okay. Native guy, but tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. I have a flight to Daytona for Jeep Beach. So I'm in Michigan at the moment.
And I just saw something about somebody having a flight delay for Jeep Beach. And of course, I won't remember who it was, but somebody on Instagram that was like, we have an issue with the wheel. And they were like, here's the ground crew. And nobody was doing any work. Like the guys in the ground crew had their feet up on the tugs and stuff. And I was like, I think you're going to be there a hot minute there, bud.
Concerning at best.
Not a good sign.
Yeah.
Not good. Jeep Beach, though. Good event. The crossover between what Jeep has done with the marketing and making the Jeep Beach production models and the actual event of Jeep Beach, they have done well for themselves in utilizing the branding there.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I have a great look, anybody that puts on events, I have great respect for, because it's not the easy path. They've certainly done a great job, and it's loads of fun. For me, I lean more toward off-roading events where you're participating in off-roading stuff. Mm-hmm. Chris, we were talking about EJS, Jeep Safari, and so on. And all of our events, there is off-roading activity at them. But man, what a great time to get the Jeep community together and have fun. And let's face it, Daytona Beach is not terrible. You could do a lot worse. There you go. Look at that.
Yep.
So fun fact, Ross, years ago, I know we've talked briefly on the show that I had a 2004 TJ.
Mm-hmm.
I took one trip to Daytona when I lived in Florida, and I did drive it on the beach for all of 30 minutes. Just to say that I did that.
Where in Florida did you live again?
Towards the Bay, Tampa Bay area, like just a little south of there in Sarasota. So I did get stuck in rush hour traffic in Orlando in a manual TJ and was like cursing life for a solid 30 minutes. Because
there's possibly no place worse in the contiguous states to get stuck in traffic than Orlando.
Orlando?
Yeah.
It wasn't the city. Like, it wasn't New York, so.
I'd argue New York is better to get stuck.
My favorite part that I always joke about moving to Florida after living out here in the Midwest, where everything is a grid system, like literally, like if one street's blocky, you go up another one and you'll get through. As I tried that in Florida and immediately ran into a canal, and I was like, I don't know how to process this. Like, why is there a body of water blocking my way right now? Like,
but that's better than running into a couple of barrel cones and some dude in a construction vest cursing at you and telling you to go back,
Go back. Just
that's an East Coast thing.
That's definitely an East Coast.
East Coast and the Northeast are special.
So speaking of things in the Northeast, do you want to talk about the GMC you had recently?
I'd like to talk about the GMC that I had recently and the Polaris that they're so kindly loaning me for the next few months.
Well, I did stop it. When we get to my updates, I did talk to the Polaris guys last week, and I was like, my podcast partner has one of these for a long time. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't get names to anybody.
Thank you, Hannah. So I had the GMC Sierra 2500 Denali Ultimate.
Good Lord, that's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. And it is $95,000, which is a huge, huge amount of money. Until you get to the Hummer EV, there is nowhere you can go from here. And it's the Duramax and the Allison. And
I'm sorry, you say $90,000?
This one as spec is $95,000.
Seems cheap.
Sorry. Probably got a couple different colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Parked next to my house.
No, have you seen the new ZR2 version of that truck?
Of the 2500?
Yes, I have. And having recently spent a week with the Ram 2500 Rebel, it's a very interesting space. So obviously the Denali Ultimate and the Rebel and ZR2 2500 Silverado, they all kind of occupy slightly different nuances in the same vicinity. You know, realistically, nobody who buys these things is going to be wheeling them the same way that a Power Wagon or a Gladiator, you know, or a ZR2 Colorado even is going to be off-roaded.
I will say, at least they step down this 2500 ZR2 wheel, so you have way more sidewall, it appears.
Yes. So the truck that I just spent a week with, the Sierra Denali Ultimate, is realistically for the person that either tows or hauls and doesn't actually go that far off road.
Okay.
But, and Chris, we've had this conversation before. I had the Sierra 1500 Denali Ultimate and put a similarly spec'd quad in the back of that. And I also had the Yukon Denali Ultimate. And I didn't think that either of those really made a lot of sense in the like luxury spec capacity. But this one kind of does, because the Delta, like, whether you're spending, you know, $80,000 or $90,000+ on a fully loaded, kitted out 2500, or, you know, like brushing up on a 3500, like, that's nobody is going to care about the difference in that price range. You know, it's as luxurious as a nice sedan. And yes, it has little badges on the fucking front bumper that say 2500. And there are if you zoom in on the front bumper, it says HD on the front bumper. Like, yeah. But by the headlights, between the headlights and the,
like, right here. Got
it. It says HD. But, and my dad has a 2018 Silverado 2500 with the Duramax, and it is a really, really, really nice vehicle. But the insulation and the refinement that this thing has, like, I'm extremely fortunate. I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, and Chris, you're just killing it. That is my dad's truck, and you can't see the trailer with two side-by-sides behind it in that picture because I blocked it with the GMC. But I'm so fortunate. I've spent a lot of time with a lot of vehicles that cost over six figures, and the degree of refinement and comfort and insulation and quality that this truck has actually really, really surprised me, because the 1500 version of it really underwhelmed. So it's such an interesting proposition. I mean, it's talking to people today. It's like, how did we end up in the world of almost $100,000 pickups?
You know? It's just the world it is. Does it have the split tailgate thing?
It has the, yeah, what is it called? It's the,
so you get the press cars, dude. I don't get the flyers.
Oh, God, not Multimatic. Multimatic is the suspension. The
suspension, yeah.
In the ZR2. Multi-Pro tailgate, I want to say. And
yeah, Multi-Pro tailgate.
Because it because it's the Denali Ultimate, it has the speaker system in the drop down portion of the tailgate.
Okay.
And I spent about 15 minutes trying to get my phone to connect with it and got to the point where I was like, fuck this, I'm done. I can't do it. I'm over it. And I gave my phone to my brother, and in 2 minutes he had the thing connected.
That's your younger brother, correct?
My younger brother. Yep. He's 5 years younger.
Staying with the stereotypes that the younger people do the technology better. Yeah.
Yep.
How has humanity made it this far without a nice speaker system in the tailgate of its truck? I'm uncertain how they made it this far.
I don't know.
You're right in line with a lot of our thinking on this podcast a lot of the time.
Yeah. And I will say, being a diehard Toyota fan and being an extreme appreciator of the fact that at one point Toyota built a 4Runner that had a button called party mode.
And yeah, 2010.
Put all of the wattage, the speakers in the tailgate. As much as I love that, the actual audio quality in the speaker setup in the Multi Pro is horrendous. And I'm not an audiophile, but an extreme, 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 music person. So
I think you get classified as an audiophile then.
I don't know. There's a different audiophile is somebody who.
So you're qualifying yourself as a music enthusiast as opposed to going all the way to the nerdiness of an audiophile.
An audiophile cares about sound quality and the nuances of treble and bass and everything there.
Hertz, wattages, and all that. All fun of stuff. That.
I'm just a music lover.
Okay.
So, anyways, so that's
then you get old, Ross. You get old, and you've been to too many rock and roll concerts over the years, and you're like, I don't know, it all sounds pretty good. Turn it up louder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also how I troubleshoot my vehicles. What's that new noise? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll just turn it up.
I didn't hear anything.
So with the Multi-Pro tailgate, did you have any issues loading the quad in the back of it?
I did not. so I got a response from GM, and GM said, be careful to distribute the weight properly when loading an ATV into the bed. And I got that response after I
had loaded the weight into the bed.
Unloaded. So Polaris very, very, very kindly has loaned me a Scrambler XP1000S to review over the next few months. And it weighs probably about 800 pounds, maybe 850 with fluids. And I weigh an amount.
So you're gonna put that number out there? That'll be a lot of fun for us.
Yeah.
I want to know how different our numbers are all of a sudden.
It starts with a one, so we can say that. But I'm also you're also fucking 6 inches taller than me. So the Multi-Pro tailgate, you're technically supposed to drop the Multi-Pro portion of it, and then
so the intersection or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and put a weight distributing thing. I don't know. The diagram that I got was long after I had loaded and unloaded it.
So they wanted you to drop the intersection of the tailgate to be able to access the Bluetooth speakers and then load the quad for safety.
I think it's more so that you don't ruin or hurt the intersection.
Yeah, it's probably that.
Because it's got a different weight limit. Yeah, I don't know. That's one of the things about the Multi-Pro tailgate that I'm like... quad went in just fine, and it was a 47 degree angle as per my measurement unloading it, which got it's not great. Truck's too tall.
The truck's tall on the wait, so you're talking about the ramp measurement?
Yeah, the ramp angle coming down was 47. Okay. Going in was not bad because I had a uphill grass thing.
Yeah, you just need a ditch. Back into the ditch, and then it's 5, 8, 10 degrees.
Yeah. In my neighborhood, I'd have to either beg somebody or, hey, I'm using your lawn.
I mean, you have so much suspension play in the quad. I figured you just jump it in there.
Yeah, the quad, man. So we'll talk about this more, but the statistics on this thing are crazy. So it has 14 inches of rear suspension travel. It has 14 and a half inches of ground clearance at the center. I mean, it's the kind of numbers that, like, you know, Jeep would love to say, you know.
It's a 23, right?
So this machine is a 22.
22, okay.
I think that's part of the reason that they gave it to me for so long.
I didn't drop it off at my house.
I'm not mad. I owned a 2013 Scrambler, so this is, you know, 10 years newer, and it's got a 160 extra cc's.
160 extra cc's?
Something. I had an 850. This is a 1000, but like the 850 is like really an 830, and the 1000 is really like a 960.
52?
It's technically 952, but, you know, call it what you will. So
that doesn't sound good on any marketing piece, though. So
no. Yeah. Right? That's why we're talking about 1000.
Yeah. I don't know. It does 0 to 60 faster than I think anything I've owned except the Corvette. So
that's fast.
Moving on.
Yeah. We could talk about my slow stuff. More Expo, the Midwest Overland and Off-Road Expo, because I'm assuming that's what the E and More stands for is Expo, but we still call it the More Expo.
More
just Expos. Like you call it the ATM machine, like it's the exact same, whatever that
RPM.
It's not an idiom, but you know
RPMs.
What I mean. Revolutions per minutes.
Yes. Like,
that exactly kind of thing. So that was down in Springfield, Missouri last weekend. I ran down there. I took one kid with me. I was all excited to drive the Lexus. It'd be the first time that I've driven the Lexus. I have an LX 470 that we recently got, which I did not take to Moab because we got it in such a short amount of time before the trip. We didn't have time to prep it. So it still needs skids and sliders. And I may have talked to some people at the More Expo about the potential for that.
Excellent.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get that going. But the literally like Wednesday before I was going to drive it down Saturday, all of a sudden check engine light came on, be it VSC track, VSC off came on. And I was like, all right, well, let's go get it scanned. It was a cylinder misfire. So quick Google search told me the one that I could get because I wanted a Denso one. I'm a Toyota guy. I want the same thing that they put in from the factory. I can get a Denso one cheap online, but it wouldn't get here until afterwards. So I ran over to my Toyota dealer. My favorite part about it was the Toyota dealer, as he's selling to me, was like, I know you gave me a Lexus VIN. I can't warranty this part. And I was like, what's that about? And he goes, Toyota's trying to protect Lexus from everyone just rushing to Toyota and buying the cheaper parts. So it's the exact same part number, the exact same part, but they won't apply any of the dealer part warranty to it because you didn't get it from the Lexus dealer.
That parts cross reference.
Yeah.
Which, saves all of us money.
Exactly. And so I
say, can't blame them, though. You know,
right. No. I knew exactly from their business model what they were doing. Yeah. And from a consumer model, the guy literally understood they're supposed to last 150,000 miles. Like the truck's got 200,000 miles on it. And this is the third coil that has been replaced on the truck, from what I can tell in the service history that I have.
200? Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, and only 200,000 miles has had three go out. So, like, well, and to be honest, it was the I made the reel the other day of like, you know, when a 20-minute fix actually is a 20-minute fix, like the John Cena dancing on Instagram thing. Like, that's exactly what it was for me. It was literally take off the engine cover, disconnect some back, or sorry, take off the engine cover, take pictures of the engine bay so I can put everything back the way I found it. Then disconnect a couple of vacuum lines, literally electric disconnect, one bolt, old coils out, new coils in, the same bolt down to 6 foot-pounds, reconnect the electrical connection, re-put the air hoses back on, plastic covers back on. Like, it was like 25 minutes. Like, it was, I literally had planned like 3.5-4 hours. And I was like, I have so much time on my hand. I went and got a car wash. I cleaned the interior. Like, I did like the rest of the
day. So much room for activities.
Exactly. I was literally just a bunch of memes. So we did drive the Lexus down, which was fun because literally, so the Rogue trip was out in Utah with a whole bunch of people from the West Coast. And I saw multiple Rogue participants at the Midwest show, including
awesome.
Huge shout out to Cindy and Jonathan, who drove from California and their Frontier. So
good for them.
What is he on Instagram real fast? I always have it close to the top.
Fucking X, Rockstar is what he is.
X Frontier underscore Overland is Jonathan and Cindy. And they crushed it. They showed up with their Frontier with the Go Fast. And we had been discussing like whether or not they would come. And then the last I heard they were coming, but then I didn't see them. And when we ran out to get lunch in the parking lot, I walked past their truck and basically took a photo of it and texted it to them or messaged them on Instagram and was like, so where are you guys at? Yeah. Like, I know we're both here.
Long time no see.
Yeah, but they were excited to see the Lexus. But interesting stuff I saw down at Moore was while we're on this kind of side-by-side ATV kick, somebody had fully kitted out a Can-Am with an RTT and multiple awnings, and I think it's Alpha Motorsport was their name, but like this was interesting. So, and for reference here, Kid 2.0 here is pretending that the Jack was a bazooka. He was like, look at my bazooka on the front of this truck. Like, if a high lift Jack could be a machine gun for everybody else in the world, why can't that be a bazooka?
I can't tell in the photo. Is that an ARB high lift?
It's the different one. It's like a power tool initiated one where it's got the circle on the bottom and they run it up with like an electric, like a 12 volt drill. But it just goes down to like the suspension arms and then it lifts the whole side up. But this was pretty intense. Like, I had to do a double take on just like what I was looking at because I was trying to figure out what vehicle was underneath all of this. And it's just a Can-Am. So that one stood out. I gotta check my other notes real fast.
Unusual tire and wheel selection for that Overlander. That
right?
No.
Such an interesting. So
it's been an hour breaking down everything that's wrong with that
view. Right. Yes. We don't need to do that. There was an Overland Mini Cooper. It was a Countryman at least. It had an RTT on it and had some all terrains. And I'll show you the photo of it. It's not magical. It is exactly what you think it is. But the sticker on the back of it made all the sense in the world because it was Arnold. Instead of get to the chopper, it was get into Koopa. And I was like, that's
pretty good.
That's pretty fantastic. Because it made me think of like at my Overland camper sticker that I have on my work paper that says get into Compa. Like it's I like a good Arnold pun. So
okay, go back to that picture of it, the wide picture
of the Mini.
Yeah. Does it have a tire mounted table? Like one of the clip on things.
Yeah. On the outside. Yeah. It's got one of those.
Okay.
So you can tell by the ladies' apparel here, it was a bit chilly. It was not super warm that day. Yeah. The other thing I saw down there, a whole bunch of everybody was down there basically, but there was one new company, which I'm always intrigued by this stuff when I'm like, that is a new tent. I haven't seen that style before. Let's talk about it. And this company is called Skinny Guy Campers. And we're going to try to talk to them about maybe getting them on here. So it's
that reference what the products are tailored towards or the people that own the company?
That's a great question, and I don't have an answer to that yet. So
I'd like to know.
But interesting take. So side ladder, like we've seen before on a number of rooftop tents, but the roof of this bed cap, which is very similar to the height of the truck, opens towards the rear. So one immediate downside is if you're on a Tacoma, this base back here is very much head height for anyone of my height. They had a Tacoma at the show, and the edges of that were like with orange tape as like health and safety hazard. This one was on, I'm not sure exactly what truck that is, but they had a couple of Tundras outside. With like, is it a Ram? I figured it was. Yeah. But I didn't want to be foolish and guess. But you enter from the side here. The bed is all this back portion, and then this just can become an interior seating area. The interesting about it is you don't lose your space below in the pickup truck bed. So if you wanted to do a drawer system or something like that below it, that's still available to you. They had stuff crammed underneath it for just traveling for shows, stuff like that. It's just an interesting, different thing I hadn't seen before.
I'm still concerned with where the name came from.
And eventually we'll get that solved for you. I have emails sent to them.
Would like to know.
I did, Ross. I know this has been, we've harped on this for the show for years. Opus was there. And so the OP4 was there. And our buddy Aaron Paris from Switchback Outdoor Safety was there as well. And I definitely.
Oh, really?
Hence his flag is back here. So I made a point of swinging by Aaron and saying hi. He and his wife are delightful humans. I get to share fun stories with them. Like, they moved from the city out to the country, but yet they're constantly making trips into the city. And I was like, that'll happen. But the real interesting thing about the Opus is because I had Kid 2.0 with me, we took a photo of me standing inside of the Opus. I'm a little short of 6'4". And with my hand all the way up, I could barely brush the top of that camper at the full apex there. And then one side converts to a king bed on the outside, the other side converts to a queen bed on the opposite side of the fold out, and then the U-shaped dinette here in the middle can also be a double sleeping position. I'm still very intrigued by this. I want to get some time with it, which I potentially have someone that I'm going to discuss that with. I think I just have to get to where his trailer dealer is to be able to borrow it. Which is definitely a good solid more than a day's drive away from me, because everything is. I live in the Midwest. There's people are like, how far is it away? It's at least eight to 9 hours. Everything fun is at least 8 to 9 hours, unless I'm going to Arkansas. Like, it's always a long drive. Mm-hmm. But that's more in a nutshell. And yeah, it was a good time. Having been to like Overland Expo West and Mountain West, it was kind of nice because, yes, the big boys of the industry were there, but there were a lot of smaller companies that came to this, companies I hadn't heard of, and was able to then experience something where maybe they don't go to the overall big expos like the Overland Expo East, West, and Mountain West, or Pacific Northwest as well. So it was interesting to just kind of interact with some new individuals. Yeah. Everyone seemed like they had good ideas. Yeah, that's about all I got.
Cool.
There's a lot of fresh ideas percolating in that space. And it seems as though there's almost a little bit of a movement away from some of the rooftop stuff.
Agreed.
So it's fun to watch how that evolves. And I think some of the rooftop stuff has gotten so big and just it's gnarly. And all of a sudden, you've got people that are trying to genuinely take these things into difficult off-road conditions, and you're adding whatever extra hundreds of pounds to the top of it.
In the worst place you could add the weight.
Yes. Right.
Sorry, this is the rear shot of that skinny guy. I realized I had one. This is on the back of a Tundra.
Oh, it's a Terrier, bro. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you could see the gap that you then create underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So everything below there is just open truck bed.
Hmm.
Just an interesting hot take. But you're, Tom, 100%. When I was in Moab, like I watched a whole bunch of people on the rally have a lot of weight up top, and then we went through off camber sections, and I drove a stock Sequoia. I didn't have anything on the roof, and I was uncomfortable. So I can't imagine adding another couple hundred pounds up top at least, and then driving those sections.
I've seen it a lot, and one of the kind of, I don't know if it's entertaining, I'm being cynical, but one of the funny parts is you see people with that up on top of their vehicle and you go, so where have you guys camped? They're like, oh, we haven't used it yet, but we've got
it. Yeah. More times than not, that's the case.
The KOA.
Well, it's a lot on top of a vehicle, and aerodynamically, from a CG standpoint, if you're genuinely taking the thing off-roading, man, I don't want anything up high if I can avoid it.
My favorite part is my local guys have all started with them up there and have all transitioned them back to adventure trailers now. Both Brett and Ron are running adventure trailers behind the truck. One, Ron helped engineer his, and Brett basically made his own. So, I'm intrigued by those. Hence my interest in the Opus. But I don't know how good my trailering skills are. Like, I've watched them both have to do 3-point turns on a trail and get away with it with a trailer. Where I don't know if I'm good enough for that. I need to take a course.
That's a corner you should only back yourself into if that's your only solution.
Yeah.
Like, sleep in a ground tent. It's not, you know.
You say sleep in a ground tent, but you haven't done it with multiple children yet.
No.
Let me introduce you. Weren't you complaining about a lack of sleep last night, or a plethora of sleep? Like, we can start trading some stories here.
The only capacity in which you can say plethora of sleep in my world is if you add up all of the nights over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Hey, I got 8 hours of sleep. It took me 4 nights, but I got it.
I towed an adventure trailer from my office in Holly, Michigan.
Okay.
On the way to Easter Jeep Safari, I had stops that I had to make. So I went from there to Wind Rock in Tennessee.
Yeah.
From Wind Rock to Mid-America Outdoors for more meetings about our upcoming Mid-America Four Fest event. From there to Albuquerque, and from Albuquerque to Moab.
Jesus. Where are you driving over that?
I have a 2021 Gladiator on 37s with 3 inches of lift and yada, 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 you know, about what you would expect from some sketchy off-road guy.
Okay. All right. So now that we've gotten there, why don't you tell us what's in your personal garage, who you are, where your place in the off-road space is, now that we've come full circle here?
Well, my place in the off-road world started as a kid. I was a dirt bike guy and a free-range kid.
Free-range kid. Fantastic term.
In northern Michigan. So, why our parents allowed us to do what we did, I have not the vaguest notion. But we would take off on our dirt bikes and come back usually before it got dark. And that led to a great sense of adventure. And like almost everybody that rides dirt bikes, you go, I could be a racer. I just kind of took it to that next level. And so thought I would chase that dream for a period of time. Did chase the dream for a period of time. And fortunately, it led me out of the retail automobile business to a point where we bought one power sports store and then started a second one and so on. Which made me circle all the way back around to the racing side of it and ended up in the event business and the off-road event business and this whole space in particular, because I got frustrated as a dealer sponsoring events that weren't very good. Mm-hmm. And so I said, like every, I guess, sort of cocky dealer or whatever, you're like, I could do it better than those guys.
Famous last words.
Famous last words for sure. But we did it. and it turned into something, and I'm grateful for, you know, all the different things that I've had the opportunity to be involved in over the years on the two-wheel side as well as on the four-wheel side, and fortunately now get to spend my days, the dealerships are sold and so on, get to spend my days creating off-road stuff for the OEMs and our series of ForeFest events, and being at all of these events and helping create other things and doing media projects and so on. So I wish I was one of these people that said, you know, when I was seven, I said I was going to do this. That just is not mm-hmm. how that has gone for me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's been different. Actually, I think that's my daughter driving there. You know, so we try to get the whole family out. Ross, I think you asked me what's in the garage at yep. this moment. Definitely some dirt bikes. Mm-hmm. So a Sherco, extreme enduro bike. Mm-hmm. And I have in my possession a very rare and elusive RMZ 450 that was part of Travis's stuff.
Okay.
So
how tall are you?
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not 5'8". So Travis and I are very different humans.
Yeah, I'm 5. I was 5'10" before they pulled part of my back out in the operating room. I can't get a leg over a 450 if I tried.
Yeah, and Travis and I don't share much in the skill realm either. sadly, he got all of that, and I got lots of nothing in that regard. But and then gotta have a trials bike. I don't know if you guys are familiar with trials, but yep. gotta have a trials yep. bike. That's super important, and because it's loads of fun, and mm-hmm. a flat track bike, and a 21 Jeep Gladiator that is rather highly modified, as you might guess, being in the business that I am. Yep. My 21 Gladiator has 83,000 miles on it.
Whoa.
Has been Whoa. All over the country, off-roading, Windrock, Kentucky, Texas, Colorado, Moab on several occasions.
Jeez. Yeah, so, that's some yeah, miles.
It gets around.
What, Nevada,
where else?
You said it's lifted, it's on 37s. What tires, what lift?
Maximus 3 lift products. With some Bilstein 8100s okay. with a little proprietary valving in them. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of other goodies on it. On BFGs, love those, but have relationships with lots of tire companies and have had
yep.
several different sets on it, as you might guess. And with 83,000 miles on it, it's, you know, and a heavy dose of yeah. off-roading.
It's had KO2s or KM3s?
KM3s.
Okay.
You know, out at our off-road park, we have a good bit of very soft terrain, unlike Moab, where you're on rock and such a lot. So we have a good bit of soft terrain. And then also a 21 Bronco Sasquatch, you know, again, modded out, can't leave stuff stock.
Interesting.
So yeah, kind of something for everybody. And I would guess that at some point there likely might be some sort of Toyota in our future as well. So you never know. That's my off-roading life on four wheels anyway. Started with a CJ7 in 1980.
Yes.
And then quickly progressed before there was Tacomas and Tundras and all of that. I had a Toyota 4x4 because that's what you called them at that moment. They were just,
mm-hmm.
there was one way that you could get it. And yep. So lots of fun memories in that one for sure. And
yeah. So you got to come full circle. You owe it to yourself to end up in some kind or capacity of Toyota.
Well, I think it's pretty common knowledge now that there's a fresh Tacoma on the near horizon. And
yeah, they keep teasing us, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
About it's I'm sure it'll be great, and they'll correct a lot of the older flaws that exist in the old one with seating position and some different things.
So when you say Toyota 4x4, this is all I think of.
Well, this was pre Marty McFly.
That's
right.
that's an 87, I believe. So this was round headlight days.
Okay.
And it had the hockey stick stripe on the side, but you had to have the roll bar, which mm-hmm. would not have done much to protect you in the event of an actual roll.
Oh, it's an appearance bar. There's no other purpose to it.
Sport bar. And sport bar, but it was a great place to mount your super cool aircraft landing lights on the top. You had to have those.
It's probably not the right color, but this feels like the right vibe.
Yeah, that is the vibe. Exactly. With the KC highlighters, that's what they were called back then. And not the right color. I had blue, but for sure.
I kind of dig the tan and brown. And so, is that weird?
Me too. I wish I could, if I could find another one of those, it would probably end up at home or at a minimum at the office. I've got a good bit of warehouse space at the office, so you never know what you'll find there.
It's always nice to know people with warehouse space. The only problem is you're way up in the Rust Belt. Like, if you were in Georgia, like, that'd be better. Like,
well, but ours serves a very practical purpose in that that is where all of our event stuff is kept. And my office is next to the off-road park. So when we're putting on events and all that, it's very convenient.
Do you have a favorite off-road park? Cause you mentioned Windrock before. How many other places have you been around?
Oh my, the list is long. So do I have a favorite? Moab feels like a spiritual home.
Right.
Mecca of sorts.
Yeah. In terms of a favorite, that's gotta be it. And anytime I get the opportunity to spend time there, I'm there. But I think like with Hollyoaks ORV Park and that project, that's been super rewarding because it is the only urban off-road park in the country. And literally it's in a suburb of Detroit and crazy. To take a depleted sand and gravel mine. I mean, this sounds kind of like my environmental jam or whatever, but it's a depleted sand and gravel mine that could not be used for some other purpose. It's next to a ski lodge. It's next to a ski resort. The snowmakers all winter make a lot of noise. There's heavy industrial next to it. You're not building a subdivision or a golf course or any of that. Not that the world needs more golf courses, but
Or an off-road park apartments. Shit.
Yeah, that too. But it's kind of the ideal purpose. And the fact that it's, 20 minutes from Jeep headquarters and 35 or 40 minutes from Ford and 40 minutes from General Motors and about an hour from Toyota R&D and Engineering Center. It's an ideal location to do an awful lot of projects. And, works good.
I'm scrambling for images, and everyone I open that says it's high res is actually a tiny image. Like, come on.
There's probably some on the Detroit ForeFest site. There's probably a bunch, but there you go.
It looks like a good time to be as close to everything as it is. That looks fantastic.
It's brilliance on the front of somebody who cares about and enjoys off-roading and knows the proximity of the major off-roading OEMs.
It's a lot of people deserve a lot of credit in this case. It's the DNR purchased the property, Department of Natural Resources purchased the property, and it's leased to the county so it can be operated as a county park. And, you know, there was a bidding process over event coordination and marketing and a bunch of other things. I happen to have the relationship with the OEMs and so on from years of working with them. And so it's wonderful. We had a county meeting today. It's amazing that it was all able to come together. And, it's kind of unlike anything else, having a legit off-road park with hundreds mm-hmm. of acres in a major metropolitan area. The fact that the OEMs are nearby certainly has its own sort of flavor to it as well. But there's been a lot of things we've been able to construct out there. There's a lot of very, very legitimate rock climbs and so on that are, you know, if you were in Moab, you'd be going, yeah, that's a good one. That's a 7.5 or an 8. Mm-hmm. That's a 40s and some V8 power kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I mean,
there's one of them.
Is he
propane powered? Sorry. Process completely off topic. Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, not much I could say looking at a buggy on Swampers, you know.
Of course, Raptors are in the air.
Well, that Raptor's about to have a really bad time in that picture. or at least the owner is.
We don't know how much speed he's carrying there. It could be a nice smooth landing right here. We're not aware.
It's probably I know that's not. I would edge toward Ross's explanation of that and say that.
Yeah.
Might have been a difficult outcome at that moment, but.
I mean, the off-road parks that are designated private property parks, you know, that exist solely for the purpose of off-roading and in some cases testing. I mean, you know, one of my favorite parks, somewhat local to the New York tri-state area, is AOAA, Anthracite Outdoor Off-Road. And I've been there when people are using it as a test bed for their King of the Hammers vehicles, you know, and they're pulling like freaking cammed out nitro-fed buggies out of their enclosed trailers. So it's really interesting to hear that the OEMs who have a vested interest in the 4x4 space are actually going to a facility that's in the greater Michigan area to put the things, you know, through the ringer.
Well, here's an interesting thing with all of that, Ross, and that is, without mentioning any specific OEMs, there are people involved in all of these projects that have very little actual off-roading experience. Perhaps some of them have designed things and said, wow, this is going to work awesome, but mm-hmm. they've never done it. Mm-hmm. And I've taken great pleasure. I mean, there's a cynical side to that too, but I've taken, you know, it's been an awesome piece of our business to take a lot of these folks out and take them off-roading and teach them some off-roading 101 skills. And you see the light come on and they're like, maybe we should do this mm-hmm. instead of that. And this thing could be even more effective than it is, or it would be easier to use, or any of those kind of things. And
yeah,
I think it's largely made a lot of these brand managers and different people a bit more authentic. I will use, as somebody that is extremely authentic, Jim Morrison, the head of the Jeep brand.
Yep.
Is like legit gnarly off-roader. And
yeah,
on many occasions I've gotten a call in a late afternoon or something. And he's like, where are you? I'm at the office. I've got something. I'm headed over. Let's go out in the park, you know, and that's we'll amazing. Go out and do some things. Right. And
you know, it's like if Ralph Gilles calls you and says, hey, we have an open track. You just say yes. Like, you know that it's going to be something that means something important to the brand, or to your general, you know, adrenaline rush.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. We don't need to jump off a cliff on EVs at this point, but I was not a huge EV fan, being, you know, an old Detroit guy. There's our guy right there.
Yep.
But not a huge EV fan. And Jim calls and says, "Hey, is there anybody at the park?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "Okay, good." And he comes over with a Wrangler that did not have blue badging on it at that point, mm-hmm. but had a very, very unusual tray underneath and some other things. And he's like, "We're taking this thing out. Let's see what it'll do." And this is a bare bones, nothing on it, street tire sport, no lockers, no anything. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Yeah, let's see what it'll do." And we had it in electric mode. And this was pretty far in advance of that ever.
Yeah. Way ahead of 4xE actually being something that anybody knew in terms of names.
But it kind of shut me down about my negative Nelly approach to electric, and it worked really, really good. And of course, you know, not being an engineer, I'm like, "Yeah, but we can't drive it in the water. So what good is that? It's an off-roader." And he's like, "No, go submerge this thing." And I'm like, "Should we touch anything? Are we going to get zapped?"
Challenge accepted. Yeah.
And obviously it was just fine, but it did just great. And now, man, they're very, very capable. And the, you know, needless to say, there's no power curve. There's just torque.
Mm-hmm.
And,
the best selling PHEV in the States.
Yeah.
Something like that's crazy.
It's so crap. Plus, how many times has Nina won the Rebel Rally with one now? At least twice, I think. Like,
Nina, please let's just record a show.
No, no, it's scheduled. It's scheduled.
It is? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
You accepted it.
God, that doesn't mean that I know.
Nina is our newest. So I'm on the board of directors of Tread Lightly.
Okay.
And Nina is our newest board member. And as far as I'm concerned, Nina's kind of a rock star.
Right?
That is really not a question. She just is a rock star.
So, yeah. Tom, quick story. When I was in Moab, we were approaching Wipeout Hill. We weren't all there yet, but I heard over the radio somebody was like, "Well, Nina's here, so she'll start spotting, and then we'll like catch up with the other spotters later." And it didn't process in my brain who it was until I was there on the hill, literally halfway down the hill, and I was like, "You're Nina Barlow." And she was like, "Yeah." And I was like, it was like that moment where they call you about like, "Hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you about your extended warranty." Like, I was like, "I've been trying to get you on the podcast for like 2 years. Would you please, here's a sticker." And she's like, "Send me an email after this date." Like, she's fantastic. Like, and to be honest, that's why I'm so glad I went on the rally, because it took being out there in Utah doing those things with those people.
Yep.
I say those people, like Scott was there with the international flight of the Rubicon 20th anniversary edition too. So like, amazing time, and I can't wait to have her on the show. We're going to dig into a lot of stuff.
Also, we've had Matt call on the show twice from
Trevor.
And
Matt and I talk almost every day, sometimes twice a day. lots
I'm
of
Matt.
Lightly stuff, and so, you know, huge respect to Matt, and obviously with Matt's leadership, Tread Lightly has taken giant leaps forward. And lots of cool projects that are in the works, and lots more good to come. And I just, again, not to get on my soapbox and preach or whatever, but we all need to, not pointing to you guys necessarily, but we all need to be concerned about land use issues and
we agree.
Responsible recreation and all of that, because there's a great number of people out there that would like to take that privilege away from us, and let's not give them the ammunition to shoot us with.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We're all in it for the same cause, and that's because we enjoy the sport of off-roading and the exploration that comes from it. And
That's our Moab project right there.
Exactly.
Hey,
when we're done, I won't send it to you now, but when we're done, I'll send you a picture of the JTE, which is what we call that.
Right.
You know, super cool vehicle. And I'll send you a picture of the JTE, perhaps in a bit more precarious position than on that flat ground that you currently see it.
Oh my gosh.
I would like to spend an extended, perhaps, ownership stint with the JTE.
I think you got to get out to Arizona because I'm pretty sure it's normally around Matt.
Yeah. Okay, let's back up a second here. So Tom, so why don't you tell us how you got into off-roading and tell us something about your brief-ish stint in the performance car world?
Well, so got into off-road, if I'm honest, by accident. We wanted to go places to ride our dirt bikes, and you had to transport your dirt bikes to places. And so you put them in the back of the truck and took them. Well, you had to learn how to be an off-roader to get to a lot of those places. Add to that, I grew up in, well, what most people would describe as a rural area outside of Detroit. And so we had hills and trails and several abandoned gravel pits. We felt an obligation to put those to good use. because why would you leave perfectly good hills sitting there without some motorized recreation on them?
Moral obligation.
Moral obligation, indeed, indeed. And that was kind of the beginning of off-roading. And then it was always a part of our life. I didn't, like, you know, you meet a lot of people and they've bought a Jeep and they're like, and here's what we're going to do. And we're going to do all these things. I wasn't on a mission. It was just what we did. Mm-hmm. We took the Jeeps up north and went two tracking with them. And of course, being largely surrounded by racing people most of my life, that led to, I bet you can't climb that. And of course, any good human is going to go, I bet I can. And,
oh yeah.
And so on.
One-upsmanship is pervasive.
Yeah. And so, on the racing side of it, I've kind of raced, I guess, just about everything, a lot of motocross, but put on the AMA Supermoto Championship for a stint. I still tell Troy Lee that he reeled me into that.
That's a name.
Oh, and man. Good buddy, good friend. His rider won Saturday night, won Supercross. So we were texting. It was very exciting.
Saw the highlights. Yeah,
it was good. Raced a good bit of Supermoto, probably in the 20,000 laps of Supermoto racing. Mm-hmm. There's our guy right there.
Yep, there he is.
That was 3 years ago. Looking at that attire, four years ago. Because it's now gas rather than KTM. Did a little stint racing go-karts, which is super like fun.
Shifters.
And have done, a good bit of track day racing because I'm around all of those people. So have had a handful of performance cars in my life, from some 911 stuff to, kind of like some favorites, RX-8 and some other stuff. Is that a rabbit hole?
No, I just literally heard one today, and every time you hear a tuner exhaust, you're like, well, I gotta at least get a look at it. It was an RX-8, and I was just like, what, how is it still going? Like, I just don't I don't expect to see an RX-8.
Yeah, those rotary engines aren't supposed to last that long. If you fill them up with gas and oil at the same time, though, they're good to go.
Exactly.
It's almost like a two-stroke.
But it's like a two-stroke. But there you go.
Ooh, that's an R3 too. Man, this is a pretty car. And
I loved it. We did sketchy things with it, some track day stuff and so on. And
I would totally own one.
And got to do a lot of stuff. I was in the Chevy business back in the in the 90s, and Jim Campbell, who now heads up GM Motorsports, mm-hmm. Was a good buddy. And I'm not suggesting he's not a friend now, but he, you know, we did a lot of stuff together. He was Camaro and Corvette brand manager at that time. And SLP was across the street from our dealership.
Was that Long Island at the time?
No, Troy, Michigan.
I thought, what was the other? There was another factory backed brand that was on Long Island.
Firehawk. But they did Firebirds only. And that ultimately, that business shifted to SLP.
Right.
And they were doing a great job. So I got to do lots of fun, like weird autocross days and different performance things with all of that. And fortunately, now get to do all kinds of off-roading things from, there's a little bit of a dare for me to race King of Hammers next year.
I'll cover
that. I don't care.
Yeah. In what vehicle and with what team?
Side by side.
Razor or Maverick?
Perhaps a different brand.
Oh no, really?
And
speed.
No. I'm not doing anything with Robbie.
Deep breath. Okay.
Love Robbie and all of the stuff that goes along with that. Classic moment at King of Hammers this year is we see a helicopter crest one of the mountaintops.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no way. That's a speed hanging beneath the helicopter. And he went and rescued one of them with a helicopter.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they fucked themselves so good they had to call the chopper. Okay, so it's a UTV, but it's not a Polaris or a Can-Am, and it's not
Yamaha.
They could be known to have green.
Oh, devices, really? Mostly.
Yeah. So,
does it start with a K and rhyme with KRX?
Perhaps.
As soon as you said green, what other green is there? Like
Team Green. I owned a Brute Force 650 for 12 years, so I have a deep, deep, deep love for Team Green. You know.
Yeah, back in the motocross days, I'm very grateful I had some support from Team Green and ultimately became a Kawasaki dealer. Little history with those guys and love all that stuff. And
I still have some Mad Cow KAW stickers floating around.
Yeah, goodness knows what is lurking around this place between my office and this house. There's untold things that from my ancient past. This is what happens when you get old. You have stuff.
Yeah. can't argue. All right, so Hammers. Okay,
so that's potentially running Hammers.
Interesting. That's exciting. Yeah,
we'll see.
That's exciting.
There's some cool racing opportunities coming up, and I feel like I'm at a stage in life where I probably need to get some of this out of my system at this moment, because at some point I may arrive at a point where I'm like, yeah, I can't do that anymore. And for right now, still in physical shape where I can. So we'll probably, there you go.
Yeah, that was about right. That's some Hammers looking.
For the audio listener, the vehicle is not on all four tires, and it is not pointed in what it would appear to be the path of the direction of the path. Like,
and based on where the driver's side rear tire is, it may not be on any tire.
There's a lot of dust for that.
That's Paul Horschel's rig there. There's a lot of things that you'll see at Hammers that you won't see in any other location, but I'm a bit intrigued by the whole thing and have now been a part of it. And I'm on the EV Hammers Racing Board. And so that's a bit of an exciting concept. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, for like for our Mid-America Four Fest event, I can't tell you how exciting it is to be partnered with Ultra Four, Jason Robinette, who has now purchased Ultra Four, and you know, be a part of all of that mix. It's fantastic. And of course, not to take Travis and Nitro Circus and Rallycross and all that out of it either.
Can you tell us what Four Fest is?
Yeah, it's a great question. it started, and this is a pretty, you know, funny but well-known story. Back before the Hollyoaks ORV park ever opened, the county official said, well, if we're going to do this thing, we need to know how it's going to work. So can you create an event? And I said, yeah, that's what we do. We do events. So we created Detroit Four Fest. And I thought, man, you know, if we had a few hundred people show up at this thing, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be cool? How neat would this be? We'll show them how it'll work and so on. And thankfully, Jim Morrison and the team at Jeep got behind it from the start. And the first year, our big problem was the ongoing issues with the sheriff, because we backed traffic up out to I-75, out to the freeway, and had 5,000 people show up.
Oh, man. It's like Clarkson's Farm. Where?
Yeah, right, yeah. And so we, you know, kind of said, holy smokes, I guess we're onto something here. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of grown from there. And now we have other OEMs involved. And Jeep has continued to be our title, which we're obviously super grateful for. And we've been able to grow it to other locations in Texas, going back 4 years ago, partnered with Red Bull to create Texas Four Fest and the Red Bull Override. Mm-hmm. Classic. That picture...
That dude is covered in mud.
Oh, Jesus.
That is from Detroit Snowfest this year. Detroit Snowfest was a dare. A bunch of my buddies are like, you know, you need to do an event in the middle of winter. And I said, yeah, okay. We'll call it Detroit Snowfest. And I asked my team to put out a couple Facebook posts. And I said, again, we'll see if a couple people respond, and it'll be at a minimum, it'll mm-hmm. be a great time with a bunch of friends to go off-roading. Mm-hmm. Number one, it didn't snow. So we very quickly.
Does it ever snow when you're planning something that has snow in the name? Never. Absolutely never.
So 72 hours before the event, I had my graphics guy change the graphic. We literally put an X through snow, wrote in mud over the top of it.
Oh.
And that guy is our poster child.
What is that? Is that just like a tube frame buggy?
Yeah, it's an old sand rail that, hey, if you've got an off-roader, you're welcome at our event. That guy had to be frozen though, because it was cold enough that it could have snowed, but it turned into Mudfest. And I thought, again, a bit like Detroit Four Fest, I thought, man, it's January, it's Michigan. If a couple hundred people show up, this is going to be great. And we'll all have a fun day and go off-roading and so on. And again, a little bit of a run-in with the sheriff, because we had 1,700 show up and backed up traffic and all that. So yeah, it just, you know, we love going winter wheeling. You know, we could, it'd be great if we had that kind of snow at that event. You can get that guy going down the hill. You can kind of see how tricky that gets to be.
But.
He was sideways going downhill.
the back end was attempting to overtake the front end, even though there was a hill in the way.
Yeah. So that's kind of where all the Four Fest stuff was born. And then 3 years ago, partnered with Nitro Rallycross and Travis and that great team that they've got to create Minnesota 4 Fest and Nitro Rallycross. That turned into a bit of a hit. And mm-hmm. that kind of led us this year to Mid-America. Yeah, there's that guy. To Mid-America 4 Fest. And this whole crazy scheme of Ultra 4 and Nitro Rallycross and Nitro Circus and a pro rodeo and concerts and Barbie Jeep racing and goodness knows what else you have.
The Barbie Jeep racing is.
Yeah, you got to have Barbie Jeep racing, right?
If only I and my friends had known when we were kids that we could, like, you know, either monetize or make like an entertainment business out of that, it would have been golden. I mean, the injuries that I have and that we have from doing shit like that, we've all done that, you know, it's yep. comedy gold.
Well, so 2 years ago, somebody in this circle got the bright idea to, as a, that guy. Where did you even find this?
Dude, it is perfect timing when you say somebody got the bright idea and your face appears on the screen.
It's just on 4Fest Instagram.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody got the bright idea to buy some minivans. And that would make an excellent race for a intermission kind of show.
Mm.
And of course, the objective was to remove the glass and the airbags. A few airbags may have been not removed, resulting in some knee bolster airbags that deployed when you jump them. That had some entertaining qualities to it, and a bunch of the Nitro guys.
Airbags hurt.
Yeah, I was not the victim of an airbag deployment, so all good for me. But I did get to hear "boom" on several occasions, and ouch. A couple comb over Steve, I think, took one. And a couple other guys. So there we go. Look at that. Shedding parts as it goes.
Look at the exhaust. The amount of rust. Just
that's mud. But either way.
Homie, that's an Astro van. That's rust.
Looking at this picture hurts my spine.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
As it should. And Russ, you having had some back troubles, you're like, yeah, that's paralysis incarnate there. It's good, solid fun. It's dirty fun. And it's funny. You got millions of dollars worth of race cars at an event. And man, watch the crowd light up when you bring out a bunch of $1,000 minivans.
Dude, that's my favorite part of Demolition Derby is like when they leave the passenger airbag in and they pop off. Like, those are fun.
Tom, where do you draw the line for yourself when it comes to motorsport or automotive shenanigans?
The line perhaps is a bit blurry.
Fair enough.
It depends on the company. You know, when you're around a lot of these people, there's a lot of dares. And occasionally I respond in a mature way to a dare. And occasionally I'm like, no, I got this. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I try to keep it pretty legit. You can imagine the upbringing my children had. Being around all of this their entire life.
How old are your children, for reference?
So 26 and 24, my daughter lives in Salt Lake City now. And I suspect she is in the ski industry. She's the U.S. I hope I get the title right. U.S. Marketing and Events Director, U.S. Marketing Brand Manager for Black Crow Skis. But I suspect that she will ultimately navigate back toward the motorsport space. My son is somewhat indifferent to the motorsports world, you know, loves being there, but is like, yeah, I'm not going to be an idiot. You know, so he keeps it pretty real. And my wife is just, you know, she knew what she was marrying. So I guess, you know,
amazing.
That's just how it turned out.
But, she tolerates then.
Yeah. She, you know, like if she never had to attend another race or another off-road event or any of that, her life would probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
Yeah. Hear that.
Mm-hmm. Mine, on the other hand, you know, I can't imagine a life without all that stuff, you know? So to me, it's what makes my heart go pitter patter. And it just, and I'm grateful that we figured out some ways to do that and turn it into a legitimate bona fide business where we get to be around all that all the time and do these fun things and create more fun things and see what kind of additional havoc, you know, we can cause and thank goodness for, you know, lots of great people around us that have, you know, kind of embraced these ideas and to have somebody like Travis and all of those guys and lots of other people from Red Bull and other places that have embraced all this stuff. It's pretty special.
So last question before we wrap, because we're hitting our time limit on the show.
It's getting late for you two. You're both in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah, seriously. So how long have you been doing the automotive ordeal professionally? And have you ever gotten sick of it? Because the trope of all tropes is do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And we've had a bunch of guests recently. You know, Matt Adair comes to mind and plenty of our, you know, YouTuber friends who they love every single second of what they do. And they've made their passion and their hobby and their, you know, their reason for existing at this point, their profession. So kind of curious to hear your take on the whole thing.
So, have I ever, I have had moments of frustration, but look, I got into it at 21 years old selling cars and became the manager and went to dealer school, all that stuff. And so, yeah, there's been moments where I was frustrated by it. Buying a power sports store was a dream come true, because here I am, this motorcycle guy. But the reality of that is that it's a business. And, you know, I was in the motorcycle, you know, side-by-side ATV business in 2008, 2009 in Metro Detroit. And, you know, so there's moments where you're like, what have I done?
Right. And not the right time to.
Yeah.
To have high hopes there. Yeah.
Right. Well, and let's face it, for those of us that are native Detroiters, we never would have ever thought that the words General Motors is bankrupt and Chrysler is bankrupt would be a thing. Mm-hmm. The second power sports store that we opened, literally from the front lawn, I could see the Chrysler headquarters. And so, you know, you walk in the morning, you're like, yep, the biggest employer near me is bankrupt. And so what are we going to do? So yeah, there's moments where you're feeling disillusioned by it and frustrated, but in terms of being able to look back on it, zero regrets. But yeah, there's always frustrating moments, and working with automotive OEMs can be frustrating for the people inside of the OEMs as well as the people outside of it. But then you pull off a great event, or you pull off a great media day for an OEM, and the stories get written and they're awesome, and the content gets created and all that, and you go, this is not terrible. I'm pretty grateful that I get to do all that kind of thing. It's awesome. And seeing smiling faces at our events, and people that, you know, take our off-road 101 courses while they're at an event or whatever. It's awesome, because they had no idea. I can't tell you how many times I've overheard. So the other lever that's in the middle, do you ever pull that one back, or what do you do with that one? It's great, Ross. And you just, I love the idea that here they are, they're out there with us, you know, they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they want to learn. And a lot of them become part of our life, become part of this adventure, crazy lifestyle thing, you know, They go do cool adventures. You never know. You see those people. I ran into one while I was in Moab. The guy went to a ForFest event, did an off-road 101 course while he was there, and now he's out in Moab doing Metal Masher and stuff. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, that escalated quickly.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's awesome. All right. So you like what you do.
That's good.
But that's good to hear. Sharing the passion.
It's hard not to. I mean, if somehow, you know, the winning lotto numbers come in or whatever, and you've got $1 gazillion, I'd be out off roading.
Yeah.
I would not be the guy that would be like, well, we've purchased a yacht and we're in the, you know, in the Med, sailing. It just not my thing. I'd be out off roading. I'd be starting another supercross team. I'd be doing something. You
know? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's our deal.
I'm the new owner of AMA.
That's not a thing. Although I have done a good bit of work for the AMA, and I am currently an AMA. I hope I say this right. AMA Pro Charter Holder, AMA Event Charter Holder, and so we still love that space and have been involved in a ton of two-wheeled stuff with those guys, and have great respect for Mike Pelletier and the whole team that's out there doing what they do. That's not an easy job. Back in 2020, we did the final 7 rounds of Supercross in Salt Lake City, all from one place. And we all had to live there for a month while we put on these events, because you weren't allowed to travel. And it was, the first big sport to come back. And so it's good.
Dude, that's great. I'm going to wrap the show up before you both turn into pumpkins, as it's the next day. We're not quite there yet, but I definitely know we're pushing time. You can rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You can like and subscribe on our YouTube feed. Tonight might be an episode that better to watch. I felt like there were a lot of visuals tonight that might not have gotten communicated across to the listener. Tom, I'm assuming at ForFest Events is the big follow you want?
Yeah, at ForFest Events or www.forfestevents.com is a good source. And we'll look for more cool stuff to come. You know, we're gonna keep this ball rolling and do more neat stuff. Again, grateful to all these people that have been so supportive and taking me in as a partner on all this stuff. And, I keep the ideas coming and my team keeps it rolling and flowing.
That's fantastic.
Yep.
You can follow Hooniverse, the Hooniverse on Twitter, the real Hooniverse on Instagram. Ross is No Not Like the One from Friends. I'm at Overlanding Dead. We did a show. Thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Look forward to seeing you. And yeah, you gotta get out to some events. We'll go do sketchy off-road stuff and laugh.
Yes, please.
Ross will drive that Polaris all the way across. It'll be great.
Oof. Okay, safety first.
Safety third.
Can I tell you, this is how late it is, because as soon as I said Polaris, I was like, crap, the Scramblers are Polaris, right? Like, I know nothing about UTV ATVs. So I was like, did I just label the wrong company?
Oh,
nailed it. Polaris.
You did good.